Attention, attention all personnel. It's MASHcast.
Hello and welcome to MASHcast, the show that analyzes and celebrates episode by episode the greatest TV series of all time, MASH, which aired on CBS from 1972 to 1983. Proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network, I'm your host, General Robert Iron Guts Kelly. Joining us this week in the VIP tent is Major Tim Price. Hi, Tim.
Oh, nice. Thank you for having me on the show, General. I just had to wondered if you wanted to see anything from the dessert cart. We've got some pie a la mode. That's a really good one. Anything you'd like.
I have to say, I'm going to pull back the curtain a little bit for everybody. And initially, I was going to give Tim the rank of captain. But he has earned a full promotion because, the recording we're doing here is my third attempt at recording with Tim because I've had to cancel twice previously because of external circumstances. And Tim, being the trooper that he is, rescheduled not once but twice uncomplainingly. So for that, you get promoted to major. I very much appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. I will take that. I was expecting to come in as Private Tim Price.
No.
I was expecting to be the with the Price, you know, Private Price. It's like that's fine. That's fine. It's a little bit scary to be starting in at that high of a level to begin with. But I'm a trooper, so I'll power through somehow.
Exactly. I mean, like I said, I like that alliteration, Private Price, but I was like, anybody that guests on the show immediately is an officer. I put everybody up in an officer. You at least start a lieutenant. So the episode here we're talking about is, of course, from season 3. It's episode 19, Aid Station. Original air date, February 11th, 1975. But Tim, this is your first time on MASHcast. This is the first time you and I have ever recorded together, which is very exciting. Yeah. Tell people how you became a fan of the show.
Well, let me see. First off, I got to check with you. What's the record for the longest episode of MASHcast so far?
A little over an hour. I think me and Dan Budnick did a couple episodes ago. We did like an hour and five, I think. So okay. Are you shooting for that?
That's just interesting. That's all.
Okay.
That's interesting just to get some context there.
Okay. Duly noted.
Okay. Well, because my story is going to be a story. It's got some comedy and some tragedy in it, which is pretty standard for how MASH is itself too. So I think that's kind of appropriate. When it first came on the air in 1972, I was probably about 5 when the first season came on. And I remember my parents watching the show pretty regularly, especially my dad. He was a minister, but and super smart. Working on PhDs in religion and had his master's in mathematics. But he loved to unwind with TV. And he watched sports, news, educational stuff, and comedies. He liked it all. And I loved TV more than he wanted me to, but it was something we could share, so that was awesome. And yeah, he loved MASH. Now, for me, I could very clearly remember one of the first episodes that made an impression on me was the Army-Navy game.
Oh, and that's a great one.
Yeah, and I can remember very clearly, even at that age, of, but first, cut the blue wire, and I learned the word propaganda thanks to that episode.
Very good. Isn't that great when you learn something like that when you're a kid? That's fantastic.
Exactly. As I tell my wife, television is the great educator. So that got me hooked on the show. But I'm definitely more of a BJ Winchester Potter era fan. I love those because I was older and I could appreciate the show better by then. And I just like those characters even more. The Winchester I thought was also a more subtle foil for Hawkeye and BJ than Frank is. But that's my era. I still like the early stuff. The early stuff is still great. I like that era, those parts more. So we're gonna fast forward to 1983 to the very end. But bear with me. This won't sound like a part of MASH to start with, but bear with me. My dad had been playing with the Joliet Junior College's community band for a few years, and that year he asked me to join him because I was playing band in high school. And they would take people from high school too. So that was great fun in a music nerd way. Obviously, I'm a multi-dimensional nerd. The Venn diagram is pretty scary on that.
Your nerdness contains many dimensions.
Exactly. You get it. So, but our rehearsals were on Monday night.
Oh, no. I already see where this is becoming a problem.
Yeah. 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 You're getting there. And we couldn't afford this new thing called VCRs yet. Because, a minister don't make a lot of money. So we missed some episodes that season, but we caught them in the summer reruns, except for the series finale. And here's where it's interesting. See, my dad was the one who decided we would skip rehearsal that night because he didn't want to miss it. So I did get to see the series finale when it originally aired. Now, a couple of days later, a letter arrived in the mail. It was from our community band director, saying basically, MASH is over, but we still have a show to prepare for, so I better see you next Monday. And I imagine he had a lot of empty chairs that night.
Right,
and we're
exactly.
Not the only one that he sent that letter to.
Yeah, I mean, who? Right, that's crazy. Yeah, you could not have been the only people that dropped what your plans were to watch MASH. I mean, that was watched by 125 million people for Pete's sakes.
Oh yeah, but also kind of showing the nerd cred of the band director too, is that one of the things we were doing was a medley that included the themes of Superman and Empire Strikes Back, E.T. So we're doing that medley right there. So that was awesome. So that was really that's just one of the memories that really sticks in my mind. And so. Also, not to be a downer, but part of the story is that my dad had been fighting cancer since 1980, and he passed away in August of 1983.
Oh, no.
So, but the important thing, and I've talked about this before on the network, and it's like it was a long time ago, but the important thing is, getting to see MASH with him was one of the last things I got to do with him that was really fun, So the show has always been special to me. I've watched it lots in reruns, and I'm really enjoying rewatching the show with this podcast. I'm using Hulu and some when I can, and sometimes I'm using MeTV. But it's just as great as I remember. So I'm just enjoying that. And, I have to thank you for giving me this great excuse to revisit MASH.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's wonderful. That would be awesome if you still had that letter. That would be such an amazing piece of pop cultural ephemera to have. If you,
I wish I still had that letter, but we moved a lot of time since 1983.
Oh,
so
why would you think to keep it?
It's long gone.
Yeah. Why? There would be no reason to keep it or anything like that. But that is really cool. Now, when you watched it with your dad, did he explain some of the stuff to you? Because obviously he's appreciating it on a slightly different level.
I don't remember him doing that, especially when I was really young. I imagine he just if I didn't get something, he didn't really worry about it. I was not also the inquisitive type. I was pretty much just soaking it in and not going, what is that, Dad? What does that mean, Dad? It's like, what's that thing hanging on the bulletin board there that the guys are very embarrassed by? It's like that. No, I didn't ask any questions like that. So,
okay, fair enough. Well, that is fantastic. That is great. I love that story. That is awesome. I wish I had something as interesting. I just watched the show that night. I didn't have any, there wasn't anything. I was in sixth grade. So my schedule was open at that point. So.
Well, as I said, also, it's one of the things that I also kind of take from MASH, and that I kind of take even from Hawkeye and the show itself, is that, as my story is kind of sad, because, I was 15 at the time when my father passed away, but, we don't all have to turn into the Punisher when something bad happens in our lives. We can decide to be happy. We can decide to find the way to have joy anyway. And that's what they do in MASH all throughout, don't they? It's it's all this horrible drama and just horror happening at all times, but they laugh their way through it because that's how they get through it.
Absolutely. So. Well, that's it. That is fantastic. That's a great, great story. So as we said at the top of the show, the episode is Aid Station. It was written by Larry Gilbart and Simon Muntner, directed by William Jurgensen. Now, for those of you that follow MASH credits closely, that name sounds kind of familiar. We'll get to that later on. An aid station at the front sends a message to the 477 that their surgeon has been killed and they need an immediate help of a new surgeon, a nurse, and a corpsman. Margaret volunteers, of course, but the doctors end up drawing straws. Actually, moldy sausages left over from breakfast picked from a bedpan, with Hawkeye being the one to go. They then assign a corpsman and it's Klinger. All three of them are clearly rattled about going to the front. Hawkeye tells Trapper there's a will in his locker. Trapper accepts the news with quiet seriousness, although the mood is lightened when Hawkeye says he wants everything donated to the Benjamin Pierce Memorial Brothel. Trapper promises to deliver the items in person. On the way to the front, the Jeep blows a tire, and it's Margaret who fixes it. They get shelled too, but they finally make it to the aid station, which has no roof due to the shelling. Hawkeye, Margaret, and Klinger work furiously, trying to give attention to all the patients streaming in. Back at the 477th, the place is quiet. Too quiet. Radar is so depressed he asks to sleep in the swamp, and Henry wanders in for a nightcap, but ends up sitting alongside Radar well into the night. After a night of sleeping in a ditch, Hawkeye, Margaret, and Klinger head back, with each of them having a better understanding of one another. They even stop for a moment to tell Margaret how great she is, something she really seems to appreciate. Klinger, a top-flight corpsman, pauses to put a dainty pillbox hat back on his head, ready to rejoin the army. Back at the 477th, Trapper and Frank complain about the poor conditions, like the bad food. Hawkeye and Margaret give each other a knowing nod, realizing they all never had it so good. All right, Tim. So what do you think of Aid Station?
Oh, I loved this episode. When you asked me to – when I asked you if I could be on the show and you very kindly said yes, and who knows what you were thinking at the time, I took
a – That was a lot younger than Tim.
Oh, there you go. That's what, well, it was 2019 when we were all hopeful and
we're all 10 years younger.
And the world was beautiful. It's not like I remembered the episodes in season three that well off the top of my head, but I did have a super scientific approach of going through a summary of all the episodes in the season, and I looked for every single one that mentioned Klinger, Radar, or Margaret in the summary. And I basically sent you that list, and like five of them on that list. And then like a couple of days later, you sent a blast, or you put it on the podcast. Like, if you're going to, when you submit to the show and request, just make it to three episodes. So that's probably thanks to me. So for the rest of you who wanted to send more than three episodes, I'm sorry. It was my fault. I was the bad actor.
It's called the Tim Price rule.
There you go. But, you know, and you like came back right away with this particular episode as the suggestion. And I watched it right then. And it's like, and my first thought was like, this is fantastic, because it has so many good character beats for Margaret. It's like, I've made no pretense that I have really enjoy the character of Margaret, Loretta Swit's portrayal of her, and even the arc that we kind of see this character go through the years. And this is like one of those other, I think, a big step on the Margaret that we see come the later seasons. So I love that. And then it also has some great bits with Klinger. Seeing how he faces this sort of situation. And so this episode was just the funniest episode by any stretch. Not at all. It has some great bits in it, but it's not really one of the funniest episodes. But it is just, what I think of MASH as really being a funny comedy that gives you some solid drama and really makes you think and makes you feel. And this one definitely does that in spades. So I just love this episode. What do you think of this one?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it is a great Margaret episode in that you can see that they are sending the character in a different direction away from Frank, that she obviously appreciates, you know, she still doesn't like Hawkeye a whole lot, but she appreciates that he is a top flight surgeon and he's got it where it counts, sort of. But even more than Margaret, to me, this is the Klinger. I can imagine if you're Jamie Farr and you are he's not a regular at this point on the show. He's still a guest appearance actor. And when they gave him this level, this is Klinger's biggest episode by this point. And you realize now we are down to the final fourth of this season. And then in season four, Jamie Farr would be promoted to a regular. You almost have to think this was the test episode. You know, like, okay, this is like, can this guy be a, you know, like, can we equate, rise him up to the level of a regular in terms of how much screen time he gets? And does he sort of like, does this actor fill the space with what he was given? And I think he does. I think Jamie Farr's performance in this episode is terrific. The scene of him in his tent, by the way, we see that Klinger seems to have a tent all by himself. Another little weird detail that somehow he never seems to share a tent with anybody, or whoever's there is never there at the same time. Maybe it's Goldman. But the scene of Klinger in his tent with Radar, where he talks about that he doesn't, you know, he has this, you know, this awful fear of being killed. It's got some real pathos to it. Jamie Farr really delivers it. And then later on in the scene in the aid station where the bombs are falling and he's trying to protect this patient and he just sort of mutters to himself, kind of curses, and he's like, Stalin, Truman, whoever. And he really delivers it with some real grit to it. Like, he's just mad that the people that run things have put him in this situation and put everybody in the situation. And so, you know, he brings it. He absolutely brings it. And again, I don't know whether, you know, whether it's like a chicken or egg thing, whether they were planning to promote Jamie Farr already. And then, so they were like, well, let's start giving him more to do. Or it was the other way around. They're like, well, let's you know, let's give him a test, see how he does. I'll never know. Maybe sometime I would get a chance to talk to Jimmy Farr. I would certainly love that if the MASH gods are listening. But but nevertheless, I just think this is such a good episode for him. And something else that's sort of funny is that when you watch it, you didn't know it at the time, and obviously they didn't plan it at the time. But when the show – outside of Father Mulcahy, when the show does the act two where they split off, characters that go to the aid station, Hawkeye, Margaret, and Klinger – are the characters that will stay on the show until the very end. And the characters that are left behind, Trapper, Henry, Frank, and Radar, are the ones that leave.
I hadn't thought about that. That's amazing.
And it's just, I mean, obviously it's completely accidental. They had no idea. I mean, they knew that Rogers and McLean Stevenson were unhappy, but certainly not Gary Berghoff or Larry Linville. But it just happens to work out that way. They're like, wow, the show sort of takes, you know, does like the Earth 1, Earth 2 thing where it sort of splits off. And it's, I love both those storylines. And because, again, I mentioned this episode was directed by William Jurgensen. To this point, he had been MASH's cinematographer. And he would continue on to be MASH's cinematographer all the way through season 5. And then over the course of his career, he would go on to direct 9 more MASHes. But this is his first as director. And he doesn't have a whole lot of directing credits. He's really more of a cinematographer. This is a fairly ambitious episode for a first director. It's got a lot of action scenes. I mean, all the stuff at the aid station is a big set piece. So that's kind of an ambitious one for a neophyte director to get. And I think he does a great job because the aid station sequences have a real sense of danger to them. I mean, they're supposed to. The bombs are falling. And like everything about like when you hear a bomb hit and then there's like this pause and then all the dust falls onto the patient. And it points like literally there's grit and crap from the ceiling falling into open wounds. Which is just horrendous. And so I love the job Jurgensen does here, but I love that then they flip back to the 477th and you have these quiet scenes where they sort of admit that with – I mean, obviously everybody is missing you know, Frank is missing Margaret, Trapper and Henry are missing Hawkeye, Raider's missing Hawkeye. I guess Raider's missing Klinger to a certain extent. But it's like I love how sad and forlorn everybody is back at the 477th without Hawkeye and Margaret and Klinger there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That, I have to – a lot of thoughts. You stir way too many thoughts in my head, which is awesome. It's awesome stuff, which is why I love your show, by the way. but, yeah, it's like when you think back – when I think back on it, I was trying to pay attention about how many scenes Klinger had – with other cast members besides Father Mulcahy, because actually in a lot of the early seasons, it seemed like there was a lot more with the two of them doing things, and then the occasional crossover with the other cast members, but it was a lot with just the two of them, which was very interesting. And this was obviously a big one where Klinger's with Radar for 2 whole scenes, and he's the whole aid station is just he's one of the trio, so there's definitely so much more for Jamie Farr to do in this episode and interact with, have a lot more meaty scenes with the other actors. So yeah, it's so good. I have to, and I do have to agree, it's going to sound like the the agreement podcast, I'm sorry. the director, like you're saying, on the aid station, it's like, yeah, we have when the dust falls down, you know, the actors are, you know, putting their hands over the patient's eyes, they're jumping over the wounds and covered with their own bodies. It's like, you know, that's a very important detail, and it's like they really sell it. And I also like even like the camera establishing shots when they come into the aid station first, and it's like they'll do that top down as Hawkeye's walking through and saying where they're going to set things up.
Yeah,
so you really
yeah,
get a sense of the location. It's not ground level. And that was probably, like you said, that's for a first time director, that's really an ambitious thing to have taken on, I would think. Really liked how that sets the whole mood and lets you really see what this situation is, what they're really getting into. And just starting off the story, it's like, it's really crazy that you know, we first off have Henry saying, this is a very dangerous mission. And we've already had a couple episodes this season where the 4077 itself is under attack with both bombed and the consultant. And for him to call this, you know, either we can call shenanigans on, oh, come on, they have this stuff happen all the time. Or you go, like, if he's calling this mission dangerous and that makes it worse than the things they live through at the base, that really tells you something. I think that really sets the tone of that, yeah, Klinger is not overreacting when he's asking Radar to write down who the dresses go to. this is a serious situation. It really establishes that really nicely.
That scene you're talking about where Klinger talks about where who's going to get his dresses, that actually features for an episode that I agree is more a little more on the dramatic side, not as much funny on purpose. It does feature to me a great comedy cut where Father Mulcahy is drawing the sausages at the end, and they're like, okay, who gets to decide which corpsman gets to go? And he reaches into the pen, and then they cut the Klinger. And that's a great cut. MASH didn't do a lot of comedy like that where the cut is the joke, where it's like you don't get to see who gets picked, and then we cut to Klinger having already heard the news that he's the one.
Yes.
You know, it's a great comedy beat. And again, maybe that was William Jurgensen, maybe it was the editor of the show, but I like that bit. I also love in that scene the grotesquerie of pulling sausages out of a bedpan. Like that is just either Simon Muntner or Larry Gelbart just being purposely gross, because obviously there are probably other places that you could have held the sausages. You didn't need to make it a bedpan, but they're doing it just to get a little kind of gross humor into the show.
Well, and they have that bit, the line from Hawkeye just before they start that, where Radar walks in with the bedpan and Hawkeye says, "You're at the wrong place, Radar. The emergency's at the front." That's a great little call out, I thought.
I also love Frank saying, "You're making a mockery of this." And he's like, Frank, you know, Hawkeye's like, "Oh, far be it for me to make a mockery of pulling sausages out of a bedpan to decide who gets to go to the front." It's like, this is already incredibly absurd, Frank. It's nonsense. I also want to mention, just because it's one of my personal hobby horses, in that scene, you get to see Henry's fourth office wall. I always enjoy that,
yes.
Where you get to see – I love the extra effort that they bother to build the wall there. I always thought that was really cool. Actor-wise, there's really not a lot of guest actors. The only person that is sort of a guest actor is the corpsman that we see at the aid station is played by Tom Deaver. He would go on to be in 5 different matches. He was in Welcome to Korea. He plays the one who's trying to stop Hawkeye from going to Weijiangbu. He's in a couple episodes, and he's always playing a corpsman of some sort. So that's the only guest actor in this. Another detail that I wanted to mention back at the aid station, we talked about the grit falling in people, the patients and stuff. But I love that when, of course, Hawkeye doesn't have a whole lot of time for niceties because they're at the aid station, and he just takes that jug of whatever it is, I guess it's some sort of disinfectant, and he just pours it right into the open wound. And you see that actor like writhe in pain. Like he goes, and he grits his teeth and his bandage falls off. And I like that little great little moment because you're like, he doesn't have time to prepare this guy. It's just this, you know, you already got this horrible wound in your midsection and now somebody's pouring some astringent into it. It's like that had to hurt like hell.
Oh, yeah. There's so many good things on that. A similar one there was when Hawkeye kind of has Klinger put direct pressure on something for him to walk away. And Klinger just looks like he's
just disgusted.
Yeah. His whole body wants to jump out of his skin.
Yeah.
Which where the damn Stalin, Truman, whoever line came from. So, they're not soft selling how brutal this is on the patients and the wounded that they're caring for, as well as them who are trying to render aid. Yeah, it's pretty rough stuff.
Right. As I'm back at the 477th, I like how Frank is super tense, and they have the running bit where he's using a ton of silk, and Henry says, "You've got enough. Rope there for the last roundup." And Frank actually snaps at Henry, and he says, "Well, then you do it." And then he pauses, sir. But before that moment, there's this great bit where he asks for more, silk, and Henry chastises him. And then you hear Frank mutter, "Oh, mind your own beeswax," which I really like. I like that little moment. You never see Frank do that ever. Mm-hmm. And I like that he's that frustrated, probably because he's not, you know, getting to hang around Margaret. But I mean, I love that moment that he actually is mouthing off to Henry. I think that's a great, I mean, it's still Frank being a jerk, but that's a little side of him we don't always really get to see.
Yeah, he's very, I guess there's a bit of him that's also guilty about having not volunteered, although he, showing his true colors, he was not going to volunteer.
No.
I mean, no. There was no way Frank was going to volunteer. Whereas Margaret is like, "I'll go." She doesn't even think about it.
Yeah.
And nobody's surprised by that. It's like, it's a shock. It's like, of course Margaret's going to do that because she's, you know, that like the character arc we have is her. Like, yeah, she's the brave one. It's smart. And she's not going to put her nurse. She's not going to have one of her nurses do something that she wouldn't do. So she leads from the front, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah. I also the scene that I like the scene. Oh, I should mention the scene where Henry takes over for Frank in the surgery. He actually dips into the patient without changing his rubber gloves, which is totally not kosher there, Henry. But they just sort of missed that. So I love the scene in the swamp where Trapper is there and Frank is there. And then Radar shows up and he says he can't sleep. And I love how nice Trapper is to him. Where he's like, you can sleep here, and Frank is being just a giant dick, and I love this whole thing. He says, you're not going to tuck him in, no bedtime story, and Trapper just goes, Radar, do you want to tuck him in to give you a bedtime story? And Radar's like, no, sir, and Trapper just goes, that's it, Frank. And I just sort of like the way he just, that's it, Frank. He just takes it, you know. He's like, okay, whatever, you're just being a jerk. And then Henry comes in, and it's just, I like the idea that without Hawkeye, the place has kind of like, there's no. The energy, there's like the air's gone out of the balloon a little bit.
Yeah, it's so funny for them to all talk about how quiet it is. It's when it's like there's still plenty of people there. There's obviously they've been doing surgery too, even so.
Yeah.
But there's that sense of like, yeah, something's missing. And during that whole scene, especially with when Radar first comes in and Trapper is kind of comforting and saying it's okay, you can sleep here. And Wayne Rogers gives this dad smile that just melts me. It's like it is so sweet and so kind. It's like I hope this was on purpose. They managed to give Wayne Rogers some good bits in, like, if you almost you get better bits by having him and Hawkeye separated than having them together to compete against. So with Hawkeye out of the way, Wayne Trapper could be the dad to Radar, and it was like that was just I just love that bit.
Again, it's so ironic that I think some of Trapper's best moments, some of Wayne Rogers' best moments, come in not only the third season, but specifically the second half of the third season, which is, you know, you think boy, that's he was presumably even unhappier with the show, but I think he ends up getting some really great stuff in the back nine. If you forgive the metaphor, the back 12, really, of MASH season 3. He's really great here. And again, I love the scene of all of them in the swamp. It's just really, really sweet. And they said, we cut back to the aid station. And so I love when they're driving back and they stop right outside the camp. And Klinger does the whole bit where he puts that little dainty little hat on. And he's like, back in the army now. And I love that even he's admitting to Margaret that it is all a joke. You know what I mean? Like, you know, it's a persona that he puts on. He's obviously not really crazy. And I just sort of like that Margaret goes along with it. It's like, look, all right, yeah, this is something I have to do because I'm committed to this bit. But we all know that I don't really need it. And like Hawkeye, Klinger is Frosty in the clutch.
Right. Oh, yes. That was one of the awesome things about this episode is that even though Klinger, you know, complained and fussed and feud and about having to go to the front and he's been trying to get out of the army. It's not like it's not like we're seeing a character who deserted when this is happening. It's like, no, he didn't like try to get out of it. He still went along and he did his part. And, like you said, this is why this really does hammer home. This is a great Klinger episode because we see that also how much he cares about the patients.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just jumping in and helping with the patients like crazy. You know, Hawkeye's telling him things to do. He's just like, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm.
this was a wonderful showcase for the character of Klinger as well as Jamie Farr's chops.
Yeah. And then once everyone is back, there's that scene with Hawkeye and Trapper where they're commiserating about what happened there. And Trapper is playing coy where he's thinking that Hawkeye is sort of beating around the bush. And, you know, he's like, oh, yeah, well, you know, come on, you Fink, start at the top. How is the major? And when I was a kid and some of this stuff went over my head, I knew what Trapper was referring to. And I thought, does Trapper really think that Hawkeye and Margaret had sex at the front? Does he really think that's what happened? I mean, I know that that's going to happen in a later episode, but it's a little bit of a different context. I mean, does he really think that Hawkeye and Margaret decided to have sex, what, while the bombs were falling? Like, come on, Trapper. What the hell, man?
I he, obviously he does think so. It doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't make any sense at all. But that is what definitely what they're implying, that that's what Chopper thinks all the way. It's like where Hawkeye gets on. It's like, your mind's in the gutter. It's like, I can't help it. The rest of my body's there.
Yeah. I love that Hawkeye throws the dirty clothes at him. He's like, you. And he just smacks him with the ball of laundry there in the back of the head.
Now, one of the things I noticed when they did that little bit is that, you know, Trapper's working on – has got a tea bag mm-hmm. that he's making his own tea. And while he's talking to Hawkeye, he like turns his back to him and he like starts looping the teabag string around a hook on the pole.
Yes.
To save it for later. And he just lets it go and it just drops to the ground anyway. Like, what was that? I think that wasn't on purpose, but also like I think Wayne Rogers didn't even react to it because I don't think he was really ready for it. Or maybe the timing was off. Maybe the clothes being thrown at Trapper was supposed to happen sooner, so it would explain why he wouldn't be paying attention to the teabag. But it's like, or maybe it just didn't matter. It's like, maybe it was like, I'm just trying to put it up there. It's like, well, it didn't work. I don't know. I'm probably overthinking it. I know, but
that's what we're here for, Tim. Just to overthink these things.
I did watch the show, you know, a bunch before talking to you. So it's like, not to every little thing.
The one little detail that I will say, speaking of overthinking it, is in the final scene where some of the crew is in the mess tent, and Hawkeye and Trapper, Frank, Margaret, and Father Mulcahy, and Frank is complaining about how, you know, the coffee's cold again, and Trapper's complaining, and it's Margaret and Hawkeye give each other the nod. I wish Klinger had been in that moment. You know what I mean? Like, Father Mulcahy, I always happy to see Father Mulcahy, but he really wasn't a part of the episode, and he doesn't even have a line. I'm like, this was Klinger's episode. He should have been there. I know he gets a nice button at the end where he talks about Radar is giving away all his dresses, and he's like, I told you to give them away if I died, you know, and it's a great comedy beat, but I wish he had been sitting there, because it's like, it's really his episode as much as anybody else's, and I wish he had just been given that extra little moment.
I do agree. I don't know how it would have worked necessarily. They would have had to give a different kind of scene. I don't know if that
Maybe
scene
so.
Itself, it was a little crowded at the table, and they had all three of them kind of give each other a nod. It's like, it's kind of awkward. It's
that's
just
true.
Awkward.
It's so, easier if it's just Hawkeye and Margaret doing
yeah,
it.
Yeah. But and that's one thing, of course, that little nod, you know, speaks volumes to them, because we had so much of a growth between the two of them. And like back at the aid station, one of the other great moments is, you know, Hawkeye has just worked on a patient and he's moving on to the next one, and Margaret's still with the patient, and she just leans down and whispers to him, you'll be okay, he's the best. That's just a fantastic line. So it's like, when you want to get around to talking about funniest lines, like, it's hard to find the funny lines, but there's lots of great lines in this episode.
Well, that's a perfect segue. Do you have a favorite line or favorite joke from this episode?
Oh, well, thankfully we talked about a lot of them already. You know, I have to give props to Margaret's monologue when she's packing with Frank there, and she gives him a couple of good jabs along the way in that one. So start with, you know, he doesn't want to go to the front because he's married with kids. Like, it's practically monogrammed on your shorts. So that's hilarious. And then it's like, when this war is over and nothing good lasts forever. It's like, And then it's like, my father was a colonel. My mother was a nurse. I was conceived on maneuvers. So, well, that doesn't kind of explain why Trapper was thinking what he was thinking.
There you go.
It's like, and then finishes with, and don't you worry, I'm coming back to you for whatever time we have left together, because I'm not just Major Margaret Houlihan, Army nurse. I'm also Margaret Houlihan, frail, vulnerable, sensitive female. And if you touch one nurse while I'm gone, I'll cut your hands off. That whole monologue is just beautiful. It just works from beginning to end. You gotta love the whole thing. If I had to pick just one thing, it'd just be that whole monologue. I have other things I like too, but I love that monologue.
Fair enough. I have two lines. I'm kind of cheating because one line is not a joke. It's a serious line, and then the other one is a joke. So, but it's my show. I can do what I want. So my favorite serious line is when Henry arrives in the swamp. And he says, you know, who's laying in Hawkeye's bunk? And Frank says, oh, it's Corporal O'Reilly. And Frank goes, Captain McIntyre promoted him. And I love that Henry just looks at him and says, Frank, it's after 5. You can stop being snotty. I just love that. It's like unclench Burns. You just the flatness by which McLean Stevenson delivers that line, I think, is just great. He's just sort of shut up, you know, like he's just stop it. So I love that line. And it's kind of a funny line in that he's, you know, shoving it to Frank. But to me, I take it more seriously that he just doesn't like Frank and he's willing to sometimes let Frank know about that. Joke wise, my favorite joke is when they decide what to do, how to draw, presumably straws, in this case, the sausages, to see who gets to go to the front. And Trapper goes, "Good luck." Pause. Hawk. And then Burns immediately looks over like, "Oh, what?" And I love that. And then even Trapper gives him a little like cutesy, "What? What do you expect?" I love that he's only wishing luck on one person.
I had that one written down too. It's so good.
That pause is fantastic. Good luck.
Yes. Yes.
Hawk. That's great.
I had the dot, dot, dot right there.
Yeah, so did I. Yeah, it's fantastic. So he said overall 8 station. It's a really good episode. I mentioned William Jurgensen being his first time. He went back to mostly being a cinematographer. Another fun MASH fact, he was the cinematographer on the failed Walter pilot from 1984, where they tried to give Radar his own show, and that did not that did not go over well. He was also the cinematographer for episodes of Trapper John M.D. He was also a director of some of those shows. The renowned TV movie Summer of Fear, where he was the cinematographer on that, and that was directed by Wes Craven. I've not actually seen that TV movie, but guests of this show, Amanda Reyes and Dan Budnick, have talked about it over on their Made for TV Mayhem podcast, and that's a movie I want to see at some point. Supposedly, it's really very good. He passed away in 2006, William Jurgensen, but otherwise, you know, I mean, a great first episode. He would go on to direct some other really good ones, but this is an ambitious show for a first-time director. I thought he did a great job.
Oh, I have to agree, totally. Getting back to some of the lines, really quick, I'm going to cheat a little bit because I'm a bad guest. that another one of the really great lines that I thought of this and shows how good the writers were really tackling this episode is that we have Hawkeye who's working in the aid station. He says, "You can't tell me they'd kill a medical professional on a mission of mercy." And Marcus says, "They've already killed one surgeon." Marcus, "I told you, you can't tell me that." And it's a complete vaudeville Groucho Marx style line, but delivered in a dramatic, scary moment. And if you would kind of miss if it was not directed that way and not shown how much peril they were under, it would be a funny moment. It would be a joke, but it doesn't come across a joke. It comes across as, "Oh gosh," you can feel the tension going through that. So yeah, there's so much to love in this episode.
Alan Alden never passed up a chance to do a Groucho like joke. He always when he could deliver one like Groucho, he did it. So overall, 8 station. It's a very, very good episode. Third season episode, and again, a nice little showcase for Klinger and showcase for Jamie Farr, and he would go on, of course, to become a regular in the beginning of season 4. And as I said, it's this really, really solid episode. So Tim, thank you for coming by and being a guest on the show. This is great to finally podcast with you.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm glad to fill up another square on my Fire and Water podcast bingo card. This is awesome.
What have you got left? Yeah, what's left?
Let's see. I haven't done anything with Rex, Max Romero or with Nathaniel Wayne.
I got to be careful. I got to warn you. If you do a show with Max Romero, he's going to try and sell you Amway stuff.
I already have like the catalog. So could he get me a discount?
You do have to work that out between the two of you. I can't.
All right, that'd be great.
So anyway, again, thank you so much for doing it. And why don't you tell people where they can find you on the internet?
Okay, great. Yeah, you can find me the best at Twitter, at TimPrice17. I'm also the regular co-host on the Batgirl Cassandra Cain podcast with Ashford Wright from the Right On Network, and that shares a feed with the Huntress Podcast, so you can find it at thehuntresspodcast.com. And also coming up in that, I haven't had a chance to mention this to you yet, is we're going to start a new show, and hopefully it'll launch in a week or so. So by the time this comes out, it should be already out. I'm going to actually take the lead for the first time on a podcast, and we're going to do a new show on that same feed of a Batman and the Outsiders podcast.
Yes! Oh, finally! Siskoid's going to be so happy.
I know he'll be chomping at the bit to be a guest host. I know he will be.
I absolutely want to do that show. I love that series.
Oh, wonderful. We will make it happen. I'll just put it that way. We will make it happen. Going to be called The Outcasters. And you'll be able to find it on Twitter at @BatOutcasters. So that's coming soon. I'm really excited about doing it and really nervous as all get out because I'm going to actually have to learn this Audacity stuff. It's kind of scary.
I'm sure you'll be able to do it, Tim.
You don't know me that well.
Okay, well, all right.
Well, I don't have I don't have a good sense of direction, so that's not a good start.
No, I'm really looking forward to that show. I bought every issue of Batman and the Outsiders. And then the Baxter book, that was a favorite title of mine. So I will be really excited for that show. That's really cool. That's fantastic news. Very cool. All right. Well, everybody, thanks for listening. Of course, if you can follow this show on our website, firewaterpodcast.com. You can subscribe to it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. And we're always talking MASH over on Twitter at MASH477Cast. And finally, if you want to support the Fine Water Podcast Network, just go to patreon.com/FW Podcast. And there you can unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name checked on a show of your choice. So a big salute to Adam Sanders, Nicholas Prom, Russell Burbage, Stan Peel, Suzanne Holland, and for the month of August, Tim Price.
What?
You bought yourself onto the show, man. That's fantastic.
What a strange coincidence.
All right.
To have another person named Tim Price sponsoring this show.
Oh, man.
That's so interesting.
Hashtag payola. That's fantastic. So thanks, everybody, for your support. Thank you, Tim, for your support of MASHcast.
Oh, you're quite
welcome. I really do appreciate it. So, again, thanks, everybody, for listening. And until next week, that is all.
There's a letter in my locker.
Okay.
It's my will.
Right.
I leave everything to the Benjamin Franklin Pierce Memorial Brothel.
I'll deliver it in person.